Investment schemes, hedge funds, stocks, shares, and now Bitcoin currencies. These are all ways in which to invest your hard-earned money. If you watch the news, it doesn't take the commentators long to tell you how well or how poorly the market is going. And in recent days, with the war in Ukraine, we've seen market values go up and down, some of them plummeting. It can be a volatile market. And yet there are trillions of pounds or dollars invested in such schemes on a yearly basis. The people who place their money there do so with the hope and with the intention that the stocks in their portfolios will bring forth profit. They will gain. But of course it doesn't always turn out that way. We know that. Sometimes the stocks don't go so well and the investor loses some or even all of his money. Now, while not everyone here will make monetary investments in such schemes, we can still all be active investors in many areas of our life. Every action, every attitude, every activity you're involved in is an investment in something. It will either reap dividends, either to the glory of God or to the glory of the flesh. Now, in the stock market, a wise investor will study the stocks before he invests in them so that he can maximize the return potential on the money he invests. Those who would make a wise investment of their money, of their lives, do the same. People who are wise investors of life examine all the very areas of their lives so they can be sure they will receive the greatest dividend from their investment. This Mother's Day, I want to look at a mother who was a wise investor. Her name was Hannah. She is presented as a woman who was a shrewd investor of her life. She made some very wise investments that continue to reap dividends down to this very day. And I trust as we look at her story together, there'll be lessons not just for the mothers in this meeting, but also for the fathers and also for each and every one of us here. Now, even though Hannah desired to do what was right and invest her life wisely for the Lord, that did not automatically mean things would go well for her. God's people find themselves in different circumstances, some very difficult, maybe some blessed in life. Life is different for each and every one of us. And sometimes we find ourselves in those difficult circumstances through no particular fault of our own. Being a Christian is no guarantee for a trouble-free life. In fact, being a Christian can often lead to a troublesome life. It can be the opposite. Troubles can start when we become a Christian, when we trust Christ as our Savior. But what this passage teaches us is that even in such circumstances, God's grace will always prove to be sufficient. Despite the trial, despite the circumstance, despite the trouble, God is faithful. Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 12 and 9, "And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me." This morning I want to consider lessons from a godly mother. I want you to see firstly the problems that Hannah faced. We're introduced to this family here in the opening verses. We have here Elkanah, the husband, the head of the home. And Elkanah is a man of some means. And you might say, well, how do you know that? Well, we'd say he's a man who has a few pounds about him because, well, for a start, he has to support two wives. And obviously that's not an easy task. He's two wives to support. He's married to Hannah, his first wife, and also to Peniah. But I also believe this was a godly man. He seems on several occasions in this passage we read together to want to observe the ritual of worship in Shiloh on an annual basis. This was long before Jerusalem became the base of the temple. The tabernacle now rested in Shiloh. And as I said, Elkanah is a godly man. He's concerned. You notice at the end of the message that Hannah fulfills her vows, the vows she made to the Lord. He's a believer. But that doesn't mean he was perfect. That doesn't mean he was living as he ought to live. His life is seriously compromised. He makes this annual trip to Shiloh, and there seems to be this measure of piety about him. But notice, he's two wives. Now, in the context of the Old Testament, And particularly in the context of this period of the Old Testament, that wasn't odd. We know that. We think of Abraham with Sarah and Hagar. We think of Jacob, of Rachel and Leah. We think of Solomon and all his wives. And although God doesn't condone it, he seems to have permitted it at certain periods in the Old Testament. But as Paul makes it clear in the New Testament, it wasn't so from the beginning. It was out of the hardness of men's hearts that God allowed this to continue. And it often was a cause of much grief. And that doesn't take great imagination to understand why it would cause grief having more than one wife. And you can see the trouble would be in the home. Hannah, we're told here in verse 5, seems to be Elkanah's favourite. She was his first wife. And at the time of the sacrifice, we read that he gave her a worthy portion. And some commentators describe this as a double portion. He loved her. But she had a problem. Two, in fact, two problems. Firstly, she was barren. She had no children. The Lord had closed her womb. And this was a huge disgrace in those times, not to have a son to pass on the family name. And you can imagine the anguish in Hannah's heart here, how she would have thought that, you know, I'm a failure to my husband. And the second problem was, Elkanah had gone and married another woman. A younger girl, perhaps a more prettier girl than she was, and her name was Paniah. And Paniah had a mouth to match her looks. She loved to rub it in. She loved to get at Hannah. She loved to take every opportunity to get that dig in. What's it like to live in a home of two wives here? This desperate situation to find yourself in. And here's the context, here's the scenario. Paniah is having children as often as the seasons come and go. They're sons and daughters. The text seems to imply that there's many of them. And Hannah, whose name means a woman of grace, truly needs grace. She truly needs grace to live in such circumstances. And you can imagine the trips to Shiloh, let alone the conversations in the home. We're not told whether these two women lived in the same house, or maybe Elkanah had two houses and he visited Hannah separately than Paniah. We're not told. Perhaps the two women didn't come into contact that often, but they did when they made the trip to Shiloh, to the temple. And you can imagine that trip, which would have taken approximately 15 miles. Dale Ralph Davis makes the remark, and you can imagine this in your mind, as they're traveling along, think of the conversation that Paniah would have with her children in front of Hannah. Oh, do all your children have enough to eat? Have you enough to eat? Oh, there's so many of you. I can hardly feed you all. Are you okay? And the children, Mummy, Miss Hannah doesn't have any children. Oh, that's right, darling. Miss Hannah doesn't have any children. But Mummy, doesn't Miss Hannah want children? Oh, yes, she wants children very, very much. Isn't that right, Hannah? Don't you want children? And Mummy, doesn't Daddy want Miss Hannah to have children? Oh, certainly he does. But Miss Hannah keeps disappointing Daddy. She can't have children. But why, Mummy? Because God won't let her. But doesn't God like Miss Hannah, Mummy? Oh, well, you need to ask her that. But I think God's cursed her. And you can imagine that conversation, can't you? As they travel along, as Paniah gets that digging at Hannah time after time and time after time. And you can think of Hannah, this godly woman, this incredibly godly woman, and this desperate circumstance she finds herself in. You see, women and men of faith are not without problems. The righteous often suffer, as we see when we read the story of Job. Hannah here was in distress. She had a rival who provoked her severely. She was miserable. The Lord had closed her womb. We read that she was bitter of soul. That means heaviness of soul. She was in anguish, we read. She was in a sorrowful of spirit. She, in verse 15, talks about her complaint and of spirit. I want you to notice in all of this. This is the thing I want you to notice. In all of this, digging from Paniah, and all of this getting in her face and laughing at her, mocking at her, ridiculing her. Did Hannah ever retaliate against her rival? No, not once. Not once did Hannah retaliate. She lived up to her name. She showed grace in it all. And I wonder this morning, could we have done the same? How often do we react when we're ridiculed or when we're provoked especially? Do we rise up in anger? Do I have to get that word back against them? Do we like to strike back or ridicule them back or speak back to them? Oh, Hannah here, we would have to say she had the perfect opportunity. And maybe even we'd say she had every right to take it back at Peniah. But no. No, she shows grace. She shows a godly character here. And what an example for us all this morning. Both mothers, both fathers, both men and women and boys and girls. We shouldn't retaliate when we're provoked. She shows grace. But what did she do here to dispel her grief? Well, she did what the psalmist instructs us to do in Psalm 62, verse 8. Trust in him at all times, ye people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Or Psalm 142, verse 1. I cried unto the Lord with my voice. With my voice unto the Lord did I make my supplication. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed before him my trouble. And when my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path. Well, this kind of sorrow and disappointment, God often uses it to build great faith and send special blessing. Think of the words in 1 Peter 5 and 10. But the God of all grace, who have called us unto his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after that ye have suffered a while, Hannah suffered, make you perfect, establish, strengthen, settle you. So what does Hannah do here in her time of trouble? Notice secondly, the prayer she offered. What distinguishes true women and men of faith is what they do when they are faced with their problems. That's what sets them apart. What they do in times of problem. And here Hannah, in her time of problem, she came to the Lord. She didn't complain about Peniah. She didn't complain to her friends or her husband. She came to the Lord. She brought her problem to the Lord and she asked him for a son, and God answered her prayer. You know, Hannah's the fourth great woman in history that we read of that was grieved because she hadn't conceived. You think of Sarah. What did Sarah do? Sarah laughed. But Hannah prayed. And she's in Shiloh here. She's made this journey for the annual feast with Peniah. Probably had all the mocking on the way there. And she's arrived here. She's distressed after her journey. But she's praying. Her lips are moving, but nothing is coming out. She's praying inwardly. She's pouring out her heart to the Lord. She's praying fervently. She's praying in humility. And she comes before the Lord here. And in verse 11, she makes a vow. She makes a vow. And this is not Hannah bargaining with God. But she makes a vow. It's an expression of devotion to God. It's a Nazarite vow. It's a vow of number 6. And she says, Lord, give me a son. And we understand that. We understand perfectly why Hannah is praying for a son. But what she says is, Lord, give me a son and I'll give him back to you. It's an incredible prayer. This woman who has been barren, looking for a son, she's willing to give him back to the Lord. She says in verse 11, Lord, look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thy handmaid. She seems to be quoting from Exodus 3 when God says he remembered the affliction of Israel in Egypt. And she might well be reciting that passage. She might say, Lord, you're the kind of God that looks upon people's afflictions. That's the kind of God you are. Well, look at my affliction, Lord. Have pity on me, Lord. Have mercy on me, Lord. I wonder, have you ever been in that circumstance? When you've nothing to bargain with. You're in a state of complete desperation. And look what she says in verse 18. Let thy handmaid find grace in thy sight. It's a classic phrase you find in the Old Testament. What she's asking for is grace. What she's asking for is mercy. And have you ever found yourself in that circumstance? And that is all you can do. You simply come before the Lord and you fall before him. You say, Lord, I don't deserve it. I don't deserve anything. But Lord, have mercy upon me. Have pity on me. I'm desperate, Lord. And this is what she does. She comes before Eli, the priest, and he's sitting on a chair. The Hebrew word is throne. And that's significant because Eli is the king figure here. But Eli is going to fall, and he's going to fall and break his neck. And he's not the answer to her problems. He thinks she's drunk, and to add insult to injury, You're in the holy place, you're praying, you're calling unto God. And if there wasn't Hannah in enough trouble, Eli accuses her of being drunk. He misreads the situation. He jumps to conclusions and he's quick to judge others. And again, what a lesson that is for us this morning, dear believer. How we often judge fellow believers. We don't know all the circumstances. We're so quick to judge. You know, maybe there's some facts which if you truly knew them, if you knew all the facts, it would change your attitude from disapproval to sympathy for them. Oh, we're so quick to judge. We're so quick to think the worst of people. But what does Paul say in 1 Corinthians 13, that great chapter on love? He said, charity thinketh no evil. Charity beareth long. And we're so quick to think evil, aren't we? You know, you hear something on the grapevine, gossip, usually, yeah? And you hear, and it's bad news, and we're so quick to believe it. But as a believer, we're not to believe it. We're not to listen to it. If it's proved right, well, that's fair enough, but we're not to think any evil. And here Eli, he thought evil of Hannah. He misread the situation. He misread her motives. But she made this vow. She said, Lord, give me a son. Give me a son and I'll give him back to you, Lord. And that's what she said. It's a prayer of utter selflessness. It's a prayer of unimaginable consecration and devotion to the purposes of the Lord. Lord, will you do this one thing for me? Just one thing. Give me a son and I'll give him back to you. I'm not sure there's a prayer quite like it in the Bible. And when you think about what we pray for in general, this is a prayer that comes out of the heart that is entirely given over to the purposes of God. You see, there's no bitterness here. And would understand if she had came to the temple and had a snipe at Peniah and said, Lord, you know, she's annoying me, Lord. She's accusing me. She's having digs at me, Lord. Lord, deal with her. Lord, help me. Will Lord overcome this? But no, she doesn't mention Peniah. She doesn't express bitterness of soul or anger against Peniah. There's none of that here in her prayer. Hannah's prayer was with heaviness of soul, with weeping and anguish, with an offer of a solemn vow unto the Lord, with persistence. It was a prayer with her whole heart, with her whole soul, and with faith in God's promises. She prayed believing. Hannah pushed through. Hannah prayed. And you notice what happened when she did so in verse 18. So the woman went her way. That's Hannah. And indeed, and her countenance was no more sad. This poor woman who had been offered food, we read that earlier. She wasn't able to eat because of all the abuse she was getting from Peniah. She was obviously depressed. But she found the antidote to the depression of her soul and spirit and seemingly her body by casting it all on the Lord. Isn't that what we're told to do in 1 Peter 5 and 7? Casting all your cares upon him, for he careth for you. Oh, dear child of God, when you have a problem, bring it to the Lord in prayer and leave it there. Leave it there. Don't lift it again. And there seems to be a lesson here for all of us, a very important lesson. And it's a lesson about who are you serving? What are you living for? What are you investing your time in? What are you investing your life in? What is your ultimate want in life? And it seems to me that Hannah has understood something that in the end her purpose in being in this world, her purpose, although she did not fully understand what that purpose was, she did not understand what Samuel would become or the importance of Samuel within the development of the history of redemption. She didn't understand all that. But she understood this. That her purpose was to live for the glory of God. Her purpose was to live in such a way and in such a manner that no matter what the circumstances may be, Lord, if it be thy will, send the worst circumstances so long as ye receive the glory for it all. I think that Hannah understood that as she prayed this prayer. Notice thirdly the promise she received. She finds herself in trouble. She pours out her heart and soul to the Lord in prayer. But she comes to the point and she realizes that God's purposes are greater than hers. God moves in a mysterious way his wonders to perform. And here God brought our son. Little Samuel was born. God turned her barrenness into blessing. Little Samuel, whose name means asked of God, brought joy to this home and especially to Hannah. And you can imagine every time that Hannah called Samuel, "Samuel, dinner's ready," it was a reminder to her that God answers prayer. Friend, how many reminders do we not have in our lives of answered prayer? More than we can recall, I suspect. What does the hymn writer say? "Count your blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done." Well, the Lord answers prayer. And here it's anything between 3 and 5 years later, when this little boy is weaned, that she goes to Shiloh. Hannah remembered her vow. That vow she made to God. And you know, folks, many people make vows. Many people make vows. And, you know, even in this denomination, there was a covenant signed many years ago by many folk in this denomination of ours. And I think you have a copy of it here somewhere. I've seen it. Most churches have a copy of it. Many people signed a covenant before God to do certain things. But yet today, many of them are no longer doing what they said they would do. It's a very dangerous thing to make a vow before the Lord and not keep it. But here Hannah, she remembered her vow. And she comes to Shiloh and she brings 2 sacrifices to the tabernacle that day. She brings the bulls for the slaughter and she brings a son for service. The words of the psalmist come to mind. "What shall I render unto the Lord for all his benefits toward me? I will take the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. I will pay my vows unto the Lord now in the presence of all his people." She fulfills her vow. Now I can understand, you may be saying, and I can understand it, how could a mother do this? How could a mother, you know, take this young child between the age of 3 or 5, we're not sure, but he's only a toddler, and bring him to the temple and leave him there? And especially leave him with Eli and Hophni and Phinehas, the evil sons of Beliah, as they're described. But you see, she made a vow. And Hannah knew that vows were made to be kept. And she knew that Samuel was to be a Nazarite. You might ask, what was a Nazarite? One commentator describes a Nazarite as this: the Nazarite provides an Old Testament picture of what every New Testament disciple should be. The Nazarite is a picture of someone who is kingdom-minded, someone who is concerned for the things that concern God, someone who is concerned to advance God's kingdom. The Nazarite is a picture of someone who is consecrated to God, who is devoted to God, who is given over to God's service. And that's what Hannah wanted for her son. She wanted her son to be a godly man. And she was prepared to do anything to ensure that her little boy would become a godly son. And she was rewarded. She was rewarded as she brought onto the stage of history Israel's greatest judge and first kingmaker. You see, God is no man's debtor, folks. Dear believer, find all your encouragement in the faithfulness and unforgetfulness of the Lord. Hannah's humiliating hardship actually played a useful role in her life. It drove her to God and forced her to look for him for all her hope and for all her help. I wonder this morning what you're working towards with your children. Hannah wanted Samuel to be a godly man. What do you want for your children this morning? What is your chief concern for your children? I wonder, are you willing to make the hard sacrifices in terms of this world in order to ensure that your children turn out to be godly, to be trained in the way of righteousness? You see, Hannah's greatest desire for Samuel was not that he'd be the richest, or that he'd be the smartest, or that he'd go to the best university in the land. That wasn't her desire for Samuel. But her one desire for Samuel was he had loved the Lord, that he would serve the Lord. And the greatest thing your child could be in this world is a servant of the Lord. Do you ever pray that your child will be a missionary? Do you ever pray that your child would be a preacher? Do you ever pray that your child would leave home and go and serve the Lord in some far off land? Or would you maybe never dream of praying those things? Rather pray that they'll go to university and get a degree and get a big job. And there's nothing wrong with those things. I'm not putting those things down. But our first thought ought to be, my child will be godly. And my child will grow up to serve the Lord, wherever the Lord wills that that child will be. Dear parents, the only earthly possession that you can ever hope to take to heaven of you is your children. And what is your desire for them? Don't get caught up with the worldly ambitions. Don't get caught up with all the things of the world, but rather seek of all your strength to lead them in the ways of God and pray for them. Pray for them. Come to the prayer meeting on a Wednesday night and uphold them at the throne of grace. Never underestimate the power of prayer or the value of a godly home. Oh, the tremendous potential for a godly, loving mother to change the world through a child conceived in faith and dedicated to the Lord. Finally, notice quickly the praise she rendered. The praise she rendered. In chapter 2, the opening verses, we records Hannah's song of praise here. Notice it was a song of rejoicing. And Hannah prayed and said, my heart rejoiceth in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. As we consider the journey Hannah made, you find that she had much to rejoice in. God had taken away her reproach. He had answered her prayer, and her son was committed to a life of service unto the Lord. And she had no way of knowing the impact that Samuel would have in Israel. But she rejoiced in the Lord. She praised the Lord for his goodness in her life. And that presents a challenge to us all as well. We have much to rejoice in. We have no way of knowing what tomorrow holds, but we know the one who holds tomorrow. We have much to rejoice in. We can rest in God's goodness and rejoice in his power. It's also a song of redemption. She says in verse 1, my mouth is enlarged over mine enemies because I rejoice in my salvation. There's little doubt here that Hannah was thankful for being delivered from the reproach of Peniah and those who scorned her. God had provided for her desires in this life. But I believe that Hannah rejoiced for her relationship with the Lord here. She experienced the salvation of the Lord. Her faith was and trust was in the Lord. And she has a song of redemption. She's been born again. She's redeemed. She could sing redeemed her love to proclaim it. I wonder this morning, can you sing that? Have you got a song of redemption upon your lips? Have you ever turned from your sin? Have you ever repented and trusted Christ as your Savior? You'll never be able to sing that song unless you're born again this morning. Here Hannah rejoiced. She rejoiced. She had so much to be thankful for. We're all thankful this morning for our mothers. We're all thankful for the mothers of our children. First and foremost, we ought to be thankful for our salvation. You see, this was a song of resolution. Verse 2, there is none as holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God. Hannah had no doubt that she served the true and living God. There was none beside him. He was the true God. He was the only God. He was the God who heard her prayer, the God who answered her prayer. She rejoiced in the Lord Almighty. And we too serve the God who is Almighty. The King of kings and Lord of lords, there's none beside him this morning. He is the one who keeps us, the one who keeps our salvation to the very end. Oh, I think you would agree this morning that Hannah stands here as a great role model, not just for mothers, but for us all here today. She offers a great example for us all to follow. She faces great adversity, but rather than growing bitter, she sought the Lord, trusted in him, and he is faithful to her and honored his faithfulness with a committed life. And each of us need that type of commitment. Maybe you need to come before the Lord this morning and renew your commitment to him. Maybe you've been investing in your family in the wrong way this morning. You've been overlooking their spiritual needs. You've been concentrating on the temporal rather than the eternal. Maybe there were promises you made to the Lord in the past when your child was born, that you'd bring them to the house of God, you'd pray for them, you'd do this for them. You've neglected those things. Come this morning before the Lord. Come before him and humbly confess. He's faithful to forgive you, and he will enable you to make the right investment for your family. Maybe you're here today and you don't have that relationship that Hannah could speak of. You don't know the Lord. Again, we urge you to come. Come and trust the Savior. He's faithful to forgive your sin. Just turn to him this morning. Ask for forgiveness, and by his marvelous grace, he will save you. The Lord bless his word, even to our hearts this morning.